is now week 5, so I'm actually going to start looking at so I'm going to talk about a couple of things that are in the book today. You don't have to have it. I'm just going to go over a couple of things. And then I'm going to suggest you read chapter 2. Basically, my attitude to the book is, they say it very clearly, I want you to read the book. I don't have to read it to you. You can do that just fine all by yourself. And they've got some interesting things in there that you should absolutely read. But I'm going to focus far more on the practical stuff, the doing stuff that kind of implements what they're talking about in the book. So, the first thing I'm going to talk about, however, if you happen to have your book, is on page 2 and 3, and it's about source language and object language, or machine language. Well, it's really more object language, but they call it either object code or machine language. Machine language can also mean a particular language that is written in very brief, kind of symbol. So, we're going to start out, and I'm going to say, okay, the first thing I do is write a program. So I have got my program, and it is going to be on disk. And this program is a source program. Okay, so it's a program I wrote. I sat at the keyboard and I wrote it. Now, prior to doing that, hopefully I thought through the logic. There is a thought process that should happen before you write out your code. And that thought process, sometimes people like visual flowcharts, sometimes they kind of outline it. They make something like pseudocode, which is false code. It's more like an outline of the code. They take notes on what they want to do. And then there are people that just start coding. And usually they end up making more mistakes than the rest. And because there really is something to the thought process of thinking through what you want to do and sketching out what you want to do before you do it. Okay, so we're going to assume that somebody did some thinking before they created this program. But now the program is sitting out on disk. Okay. Now, there are two kinds of things that they talk about in the book. They say a compiler or an interpreter. Okay, so you're going to run your program through a compiler or an interpreter. Essentially, when people first started programming, they wrote in languages that the computer could understand, and it took forever to say, hello world. It just took forever to write the programs. So high-level languages were developed. And high-level languages need to be either compiled or interpreted. Okay, an interpreter interprets as it goes along. So it reads your line of code and it interprets it. And it reads the next line of code and it interprets it. So it interprets as it goes along. And that's probably a simplification. It certainly looks back and forth a little too. A compiler waits until you put the whole program in and it translates it all at once. So a compiler will just put the whole thing together, and that's what we're going to talk about, is a compiler here. So out on my disk, out on my computer, I have a compiler. And what the compiler's job is to take the source program that I wrote and translate that into machine language or into object code. So its job is to translate this and turn it into object. So it's now the object program, or object code. Okay, object code, as they say, is also called machine language. Object-oriented programming is something totally different. So, unfortunately, these words kind of pop up in multiple uses. But an object program or object code is a translation by the compiler. Okay, now the compiler is looking at your program, and if you make a language error, for example, you should have said write, W-R-I-T-E, and instead you said write, R-I-G-H-T, or you spelled something wrong, you spelled add as odd, it's not going to be able to translate that. And so it is going to kick out errors, and those errors are going to be syntax errors. Okay? Misuse of the language, basically. They are simply telling you whether they can do the translation. Okay? Whether they can translate what you wrote into machine language. And if you misuse the language and make a spelling error or leave out commas or semicolons or whatever they need, then they can't translate it. Okay? Because all of those things have meanings. And so if you end up with a syntax error, it kicks it out, and you've got to go back to your source program and correct it. Okay, so if you get syntax errors, you have to go back to your source code and correct it and then try to compile again. Okay, and you keep doing that until finally it produces the object program. So if it compiles successfully, that's when you get the object code. The object code doesn't get created unless you compile successfully. Okay, so it translates and produces this output. So now I've got the program such that the computer can understand it. I can't understand it anymore, but the computer can understand it. Okay, so the source code is what I wrote, and the object code is what has been translated. So now I say, okay, now I'm ready to run this program. Now, probably I am going to be using some data. Okay, and the data can be stored on a disk. So I can have, if I'm doing payroll, I have all of my employees and how much they make per hour and all that sort of stuff up on a disk. Okay, so I am bringing in my program. The program is reading the data. It may be taking screen input as well. So I may be sending in things that I type in on the screen. But it is now taking this. So my object program is now running. My object program is now running. Okay? And it's reading data, and it's reading things off the screen, and it's producing output. Whatever output you wanted. Up here, it had input coming in. This is processing, and you are producing output. Okay, so now you look at the output that it generated. And this output could be going onto a screen. This output could have been written onto a disk. This output could be written onto paper. Okay, but you look at the output you produced. And right now what you want to do is you want to check for logic errors. Okay. And you have to check for that. The computer can't check for that because it doesn't know what you were trying to do. So, for example, if you're doing payroll and you need to multiply pay per hours times hours worked, and you add instead of multiply, the computer didn't know what you wanted to do. So you add them instead of multiply, so you work 40 hours at $20 an hour, and now it's saying 60. Okay? So if it gives you 60, hopefully you look at the output and say, no, that's not the right pay. I shouldn't be making 60, I should be making 800. And so you check for logic errors where you made a mistake, not with using the language, but in telling the computer what to do. Okay? You said to add, and you meant to say multiply, or a whole bunch of other things you could do, but that's kind of a good example. So if you made a logic error, then you've got to go all the way back over here, and you have to fix your program, recompile your program, hope that you managed to fix it without making a mistake so it compiled, and then you load your program and execute again. And again, you check the logic errors. Okay? So those are the steps that you go through in doing a program. Now, sometimes it's reasonably invisible in that you put in the program, and if it works, all of a sudden it starts reading the data and runs, and it's kind of invisible that it moved between compiling and executing. Okay? Older languages didn't used to be quite as invisible, but now it can be very invisible. You'll get the errors will come out. If you've got syntax errors, they will come out and it won't run. But if you clean up the syntax errors, it can be invisible and it will all of a sudden run. It will check and then it will run since everything was okay. And it's not really a stop and start process. It just happens. Questions? Always bothers me when I don't get questions. I can't be that clear, guys. Okay, if I don't have any questions, they're on page 2 and 3 in your book. The next thing that they talk about in the book is understanding the programming process. And I want to go over that for a minute. Okay, so they say, first of all, what I talked about, which is thinking about it. So the first thing they say is understand the problem. Okay. And you have encountered this lots of times already, probably. When you read in Access, for example, what I want to do, and you say, what is she talking about? What is it that she wants here? Okay? Understanding the problem is important. And if you don't understand the problem, then you need to go, and in my case, you need to ask me questions. But you need to find out what the problem is. I got to the point when I was programming that people would present a problem that they wanted solved. And I would write down my understanding of what they said they wanted to do and get them to sign off on it. Because you don't want to go through writing the whole program, running it, and then say, oh, I meant, you know, you want to make sure that you understand what the problem is and what they want solved. Okay? So the next thing you do is plan the logic. Okay, and again, your book lists these starting on page something or other, 5. So you plan the logic. And that's what I was talking about before when I said think through how you're going to do it. And there are a lot of tools that you can use to plan the logic. People use logic flowcharts. They use pseudocode. They use a variety of tools, decision tables. There's a whole lot of tools that you can use to figure things out. Okay? So then the next thing you do is you code the program. Okay, so you write out what the program is. So you code the program. And then on the next page they say, using software, a compiler or interpreter, to translate it into machine language. So the fourth thing is to translate, which is a compiler or an interpreter. I can never spell interpreter right. It's got an E or an A in it. Yeah, I got it right this time. Okay. Sometimes I prefer an A at the end. So once you've got it translated, then you have to test the program. Okay, and that means it's been successfully compiled. Then you're testing the program. And this is where, as I said, you're looking for logic. Okay. And you want to test a program extremely well. Okay, usually what people do is they test the program with their data. Then they try testing it with data that somebody else created. Because you're not going to think of everything necessarily. They're going to come up with data. So lots of times the project leader will have created data for you to test on. The other problem is that you are combining lots of times with another program. So you write one program and somebody else writes another program. You're producing output that's going to be input to the next program. So you've got to test and make sure that the output you produce can be successfully read by somebody else's program. Okay? If they think that the order of things is an ID and then a name and then a major, but you have ID and then name and then address, that's not going to work in your data. So you have to test the program. And then usually, if possible, you test it with live data, which is the real stuff. Now, sometimes that's not possible. But if it's possible, you usually try to test with live data and make sure that it's working. So after you've tested everything, you put it into production. Okay? So that means you start using it. But that's why testing is so important. When it goes into production, if people's paychecks aren't being calculated correctly, they're going to think you're an idiot. Okay? And they're not going to be happy. So that's why you test everything as much as you possibly can, so that when it goes into production, it will work. Okay? And then last is maintenance. You want to maintain the data, maintain the program. So somebody that's using the program says, you know, you are producing a report for me. And two columns that I need to compare are, one is over here and one is over here. It would be a lot better if they were next to each other. Can you make that change? Sure, I can make that change, but that's maintenance. And that came from somebody working with the program and deciding a better way of doing it. Maintenance also happens because the federal government changes the laws. And so you have to go in and change the laws, or the state changes the laws, and you have to go in and change that. Or somebody just comes up with a brilliant idea and they want it changed. Usually a company will be very responsive at changing things at the beginning, and then they'll say, okay, this is it. From now on, if you want something changed, you've got to produce a form. You've got to fill out a form asking for this change to be made. You have to submit the form, and the form will be reviewed, and we'll do maintenance once a month or once every 6 months or whatever it is we decide to do. But we can't just keep playing with it forever. We've got to put it into a more organized kind of maintenance. And that's what usually happens. Okay, so those are the things that they go through, and then they give you their interpretation of that forever. And then they talk about, on page 11, the flowchart and the pseudocode, and we're actually going to look at those. And I think that pretty much covers it. The other thing they get to is on page 15, they talk about variables versus constants. And a variable is something you set up in memory, okay, to hold something. I put something in memory to hold it. I want to do some work. It's like your calculator. Something goes into memory that you can work with. Okay, so I store variables in memory. And a constant is something like if I want to do a comparison against CI, like you did in Access, CI is a constant. I'm comparing it against CI. Okay, and they talk about that on the next few pages and types of data. But I think we're going to see those kind of as we go along. I would like you to read it. One of the things that they talk about that I just want to briefly mention is the assignment sign. If I say count equals one, that's an assignment sign. I say count equals one because that's the way I've said it for years. But in fact, what I'm saying is take one and assign it to count. Count is a variable. Okay, count is a variable. And it is set up in memory, so I have an area called count. All right, we'll make that a count. And let's say I started out at zero. If I want to say make count equal to one, I say count equals one, and it now changes over to one. I'm assigning one to count. Okay? And this becomes real clear if I write the statement count equals count plus one. Okay? And I have a memory variable again called count, and I'll start it out at zero. So at this point, what I'm saying is count is zero. Count plus one is one, right? Zero plus one is one. And then I'm saying, now assign this to count. So I'm saying zero plus one, count is now a one. If I hit that instruction again, it says take what's in count, which is a one, add one to it and put it back in count. It's now a 2. Next time I hit it, take count, which is a 2, add 1 to it, and assign it back to count. It's now a 3. Count does not equal count plus 1, so that's why it's not an equal sign. But I can say take count, add 1 to it, and assign it back to count, or put it back into count. And that's why it's called an assignment sign. Now, when I'm comparing, I have an equal sign. So when I compare and say if count equals one, that's now an equal sign. So that equal sign depends on how it's being used. If I say if count equals one, do such and such, then it is doing a comparison for it being equal. Some languages understand this problem of equal sign having two different meanings, and they say when you're comparing, you're going to have to write a double equal, equal equal. And if you write equal equal, then that's an equal sign. If you write a single equal, that's an assignment. Okay, so some languages will say, in some languages, equals is equal equal. So that you make the difference between the assignment and the compare and the compare equal. Questions? Okay, read chapter one. I will post a quiz for chapter one next week. So at that point, you'll have to read it. Okay, what I want to do now is look at an example. So I'm going to bring up this in-class logic exercise. And I would suggest that you bring it up. Okay. So, what I have got here is I have a very simple little program. And I have written out a logic flowchart to solve my problem. And I have written out pseudocode to solve my problem. What pseudocode is writing out the steps one at a time, but not worrying about the language. Okay, because if I write a program in Visual Basic, or I write a program in C, or I write it in C Sharp, or I write it in PHP, it's going to have different syntax in every language. But the logic of what I want to do is going to be the same. So if I just write it out in English, that's pseudocode. Okay, and not worry about the language. But just write out what I want to accomplish in English. That's pseudocode. Okay, so what I've done here is I've got this little program, and I've said, okay, declare variables in memory. So I have set up in memory an area for an ID number, a name, pay per hour, hours worked, pay, and pay after. So I've set up in memory a spot to hold all of those. Okay, and in memory, I set them up by name. So I have a field for ID number. Okay, and it's decided it doesn't want to write. So I have a field called ID number and a place in memory to put it. And something called names and a place in memory to put it. And for all the rest of them as well. So I've set those up in memory. And then I said, okay, input. And input is going to put something into them. So input takes and puts something into the fields. Well, I only put something into ID, name, pay per hour, and hours worked. The other two are output. So these two are going to be output. So I can't ask the user to type those in. They're going to be the result of doing a calculation. Those are output. So I am taking in the things that the user can type in, which are ID, name, pay per hour, and hours worked. Then I said, calculate pay. So I said, okay, pay, because I said, I got to figure this out. I got to figure out pay and pay after. Pay is going to be equal to pay per hour times hours worked. And then I'm going to do another calculation of pay after and say pay after equals pay times 0.8. So I'm basically taking 20% of whatever you make for whatever, and you're only getting 80% of it. Taxes, savings plans, whatever, I'm taking a certain amount. And then I said, okay, now output the ID, the name, the pay, and the pay after. So ID and name came in as input. I calculated pay and pay after, and I'm writing them out. Now, when I did that in the pseudocode, I said declare the variables, and I used two lines to do that because I basically ran out of room. But I kind of broke it down to the input is on the first line and the output's on the second. And then I said input the things, do the calculations, and output. In computer, you always put the calculation you want to do on the right, and the answer is always on the left. And I've only seen one example where that wasn't true, one language where that wasn't true. So you're awfully sure, can be awfully sure of yourself if you put the calculation over on the right and the answer over on the left. Okay. So I'm doing my two calculations, and then I'm putting my output out and stopping. So if I have my input is John Doe down here, so I am putting up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is his ID. His name is John Doe. I'm also putting up his paper hour, which is, according to my input, 25. And his hours worked, which is 20. So I'm coming in with those numbers. Okay? And now I want to follow the program and figure out the two things that I'm getting from the calculation, which are pay and pay after. Okay? So, I want to figure those out. So, I start out and I declared the variables, then I read the input into them, and the input came from down here. Then I said calculate pay equals pay per hour times hours worked. So it's what? 500. And then I said, okay, and pay after is going to be pay times 0.8, so it's 400. Okay. And then I said, output these. So let's say I was putting them up on a screen. I put 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, John Doe, 500, 400. And that's the output that I put up on the screen. So I put in the information, I did the calculation, and I produced the output. Now, in reality, I'd probably also want to write that out on disk someplace, but I didn't do that here. I just said output and didn't tell you whether it was going on the screen or to a disk. Okay? Questions? Okay. So the next one. If you come down here, this is the exact same thing, it's just using a module or a procedure. So this is saying, yeah, I've been doing this all day, it's lovely. Actually, it gets the right output at least. Let's see if we can get it to cooperate. This says, go up here and execute this, and when you're done, come back in and move on to the next thing. So this can be called a module, it can be called a procedure, it can be called a subroutine. But any of the above, it's saying basically, go out and do that separate routine, and when you're done, come on back. The reason for that is to kind of break it up, and what you would do is you would have a separate component in your program called a module or a subroutine or a procedure that does that work, so that everything isn't one great big piece of code, so that you break out to do specific things, okay? So the output on this one is exactly the same because I went to the subroutine and I did the two calculations, and when I came back, I outputted them. So there is no difference between this and number one except for the style of the flowchart and the style of the pseudocode. So with the pseudocode, it basically says go down and do this. And when you're done, come back and continue on your way. Okay. And again, this lets me kind of organize a little better than having everything all in one great big long list. Okay, number three. Now my routine has got an if statement in it. So I'm going out and I'm saying, I came in, first of all, with a pay code. So I've added a pay code. And you can see that up here I said my variables are an ID, a name, and a pay code. If the pay code is an H, I want to calculate the pay by doing a multiplication. If the pay code is not an H, I want to calculate the pay by taking the salary, and that is something I've also added in, and dividing it by 52. So if I look down here, I've got ID, I've got name. Yeah, right. Not so smart, the smart board. Okay, so I've got a pay code right there. Then I've got pay per hour, which is a zero because this person is salaried. Then I've got hours worked, which is a zero because the person is salaried. And then I've got salary. Okay, so I read this in, is the pay code an H? No, it's an S. So I go over and I take the salary, which is 52,000, and I divide it by 52, which gives me 1,000, right? So pay is 1,000 when I get through this, right? 52,000 divided by 52 gives me 1,000 for pay. And then pay after is going to be 800, right? Because 1,000 times 0.8 is 800. And so I return back here and I write out 11111 and Smith 1,800. What about the next one? What am I going to produce as output for that?
That one you're going to say, yes, so you're going to do the pay per hour versus salary.
Right, and what's the answer going to be? Somebody, what's the answer? What's the answer? If I read problem four, if I read in 12121, Linda French, H 2540, what is the answer going to be? Wait a minute. Okay, I read those in. I say, go do the subroutine called calculate pay. It has an H in it. So I say, okay. That's a yes, pay code equals H. So I calculate the pay, which is the pay per hour, which is 25, times the hours worked, which is 40. 25 times 40 is 1,000. And then I take 80% of that. So I've got 800. So I'm going to see the exact same thing, the 1,000 and the 800. Questions. Okay, we're going to do the next one on your own. Okay, there's that one. Figure out problem five, and then we'll look at it, and then do six and seven. And maybe eight is there too? Nope, just six and seven. Okay. You look at the defined variables, and I did them in the order. So this is ID number, message, location, department, and budget are the things I'm setting up, but message isn't part of this. So the input tells me what I've got here. Okay, and I'll get the pen. So the input is telling me what I'm taking in. So I'm taking in ID number, which is 1111, location, which is Fall River, department, which is 22, and budget, which is 600,000. Okay, so go in and figure out what I would produce for output, which is ID, message, location, department, and budget. What the output would be from number 5? Yeah.
It would be 58,000.
Actually, I didn't ask you to work that hard. No. I asked you to just tell me what the message would be.
Oh, return or module in terrain again, wouldn't you?
Okay.
It would say greater than apartment 15.
Yes.
500,000 it is.
Yes.
Cut by 7%, right?
That's right. Exactly. Okay. So your output would be the ID number, which is 1111, the message, which is cut 7%, the location, the department, and the budget, which are Fall River 22 and 600,000. So it's that basic, essentially. So I would come in here and I would say, okay, take in that input. So ID is 1111, Fall River is location, 22 is department, 600,000 is budget. Then I said, okay, now go do the module. So it goes up here. Is department greater than 15? Yeah, 22 is greater than 15. So I take the yes. Is budget greater than 500,000?
Yeah.
So, therefore, my message is going to say cut 7%. So my output is going to be, for number 7, or number 5, rather, is going to be 1111, the message, which is cut 7%, the location, which is Fall River, the department, which is 22, and the budget, which is 600,000.
So they fired the entry-level guy.
Pardon me?
I said they fired the
entry-level guy. Okay, what is 8? What is 6, rather?
We're doing 6?
Yep, do 6 and 7. And don't say them right away, let other people get them done, but try doing the 6 and 7.
Calculate out what the actual cut is?
No, because I said just put out a message that tells them to cut 7%. I was being nice to you so that you didn't have to get out your calculator. paper and pencils are wonderful things. Which, by the way, I need you all to sign. This is a homework assignment. For however far we get in it in class today, you only have to do the ones after it. So if your name is on this list. So if we get through 20, then you only have to do the 21 through, I think it goes through 30. So if your name's on this list, you don't have to do the whole thing. If your name's not on the list, you do.
So when you get home, we can do 21 through 30?
Depends on how far we get.
Okay.
I don't know what you're going to have to do.
Stop asking questions then.
Speaking of which, I actually do have a question.
Yes?
When it says cut 5%, do you want us to actually do the math?
No.
Okay. I know you probably already asked that.
Yep.
Sorry.
The output is says ID number and then message second. So the output says put up the ID number, then the message, then the location, then the department, and then the budget. Try following the directions of the flowchart, literally.
Oh, okay.
Declare those variables, then take in that data, then do the budget message, which means go over here and ask, is department greater than 15, yes or no? And follow the directions, basically.
Oh, okay.
So what's number six?
One more thing?
Sure.
1212, cut 5%.
Yep.
PR 19, 400K.
Right. So number six, I'm still not able to write without hitting my special magic point over here. Should never happen. Okay, so number six is going to be 1212, and you said cut 5%, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then Fall River and other things. Okay, and I just ran out of room, but you would also be putting department and budget there. Now, why was that? Because it came in and it said, is department greater than 15? Yes, 19 is greater than 15. And then it says, is budget greater than 500,000? No, 400,000 is not greater than 500,000. Yeah. 400,000 is not greater than 500,000, so it takes the no, and it says cut 5%. Okay? What's number seven?
Department, no, cut 3%.
That's right. The pound number seven comes in and it says, okay, what is the department? Is the department greater than 15?
No.
It's 14, right? So it takes the no, and the no simply says cut 3%. So number seven is going to say 2222. And then it's going to say cut 3%, and it is New Bedford and the other stuff that I wanted. Questions? Is it starting to make sense? Promise? Okay, let's look at the next page. Okay, there's the next page. So, do 8, 9, and 10. And then we'll ask about them. Yeah, ma'am.
What is the
It's not over 15, so it's still
not great.
Wait a minute, okay. First, let's go with number 8.
Okay.
What's number 8?
Cut
6%. Okay, the rest of the stuff is just copy. You're going to write out the 3333 and then the cut, how much?
6%.
And then the location, which is DO 20 and 600,000. Okay. So from now on, we're just going to write the message. Okay, I'm getting lazy. So, what is number 9 going to be?
Cut 3.
Okay, because 15 is not greater than 15, right?
Exactly, I have 15, so it would be greater.
And so, then is the budget greater? No, so it's cut 3%. What is the last one, the 10th one?
Cut 4.
And this is cut 4%. Okay, because it's 14, which is clearly not greater than 15, and the budget is greater than 500,000, and so it's cut 4%. Okay. Number 11. Now I've added a thing called spent. So the thing after budget is spent. ID, location, department, budget, and spent. Okay? So take a few minutes and do the 4 of them that are showing there. If you've got questions, ask. If you get bored after you get these 4 done and you're waiting, feel free to keep going. Also mention that this is enrollment verification week. If I haven't gotten emails from you, then you don't exist. So, therefore, if you don't want to be dropped, you better get me something. Okay? so I need an email from you. I think the people that I don't know are here. I've already sent an email to, and you should respond to it. Because if I don't have homework from you, then I don't know that you exist. Okay. Yes, I know you exist, John.
Okay, good. I'm worried there for a second.
Okay. 11 is what?
30%.
Okay. The first question, yeah.
I have a random question. Do we always assume that yes goes right and no goes left?
Yeah. Yeah, and I noticed that I left it off on one. Actually, the majority of the world does. Every once in a while, you find somebody that gets creative on that.
Okay.
But with me, yes always goes off to the right and no always goes off to the left. Yeah.
I have a question. With pay code equals H, is that like a variable? H is the variable. I'm on number 3.
Number
13.
13. I don't see an H.
That's no, I'm on right. Number 3.
Okay. So what are you asking?
Is H a variable?
No, H is a constant.
Okay.
I'm comparing to H. I'm comparing pay code, which is the variable, to H, which is a constant.
Okay.
Or a literal. You can call it a literal. I actually usually call it a literal, I think. Okay, so back to 11. You said, let's see, department is 10, so it gets a no to the first question, and that means it's cut 3%, right? Okay, 12. Okay. Because it's department 16, which is greater than 15. The budget is greater than 500, no. The spent greater than 250, yes. So I'm cutting 5%. Okay. So on this one, I've got cut 3%, and on the next one, it's cut 5%. What about the next one?
5%.
5%? Okay, so 16 is greater, and the budget is not, and the amount is, so that's another cut 5%. And what's the last one?
4%.
Okay. 4%, because I got a no to both budget greater than 500 and a no to spend, right? So it's cut 4%. Okay, pick up the next view. So go to 15. Okay, now I'm doing pseudocode. So starting with 15, we're looking at it using pseudocode. Same kinds of questions. If department is less than 20, then I say cut 5%. Else, I ask a question. Is budget greater than 350? If it is, it's cut 7%. Else, it's cut 6%. And I end each of the ifs. So the rules for ifs and elses are an else attaches itself up to the first available if. Okay, so the else attaches itself up to the first available if. And that also holds for end ifs. Okay, so this attaches up to there. Then I ask the next question, its else attaches to that if. Its end if and end if. Okay. Maybe Visual Basic will come up before the class, though. Anybody got any questions, please ask. What have you got for
15?
7%. 7%? Is that consensus? Okay. 15 is 7%. Again, what I'm looking at is I've got a 20, so is department less than 20? No. So I take the else. Is budget greater than 350? So it's 7%. Okay, what about 60?
5%.
5%? Is that the consensus? Okay, so I'm asking there, is department less than 20? Yes, it is. Is budget greater than 350? No, it's not. So I take the else and I get, wait a minute. Yeah. Okay, why didn't anybody stop me?
I wanted to say something else there.
I can make mistakes as easily as anybody. Is department less than 20? Okay, is 14 less than 20?
Yes.
Yeah, duh. Okay, so 14 is less than 20, so 5% was right. So see, all of you were a lot smarter. Okay, so now 25. That one I'm going to get a no on, right? 25 is not less than 20. So then I go down and I take the else. And I say, is the budget greater than 350? No. So what's the answer on this one? Okay. And you all agree with that? Okay. And now you've kind of figured out you shouldn't trust me. Okay. All right, 18 is kind of interesting. So we will move on to 18. Oh, first, notice here, there are two ifs, two elses, and two end ifs on the ones we just looked at. So all the ifs have an else, and they have an end if. Now I get down here to this one. And notice there's only one else. So, What happens if department is not less than 20?
Cut 6.
Nothing.
Nothing, it doesn't work.
Nothing, right. It just drops out. Okay? And that may be what I wanted. I mean, when I wrote this, that is what I wanted. But that may be what I wanted. If it isn't what I want, then I would come over here and I would stick in my else in there. Okay? So if that's not what I wanted, I wanted to do nothing. And sometimes that's what you want. You want to do nothing. But in this case, if I wanted something, I could have put an else in there and done something. And that's what would have happened if department was not less than 20. Okay? I could have done this. And if I wanted to, I probably would have been a great way of doing it, would have been to say message equals nothing. Okay? And so that would make my message equal to nothing.
Would it still output the other stuff?
If it were, yes, this isn't wrong. This is just the programmer, for whatever reason, decided that if department was less than 20, they had stuff to do. But if department wasn't less than 20, they had nothing to do. Okay, so it's not wrong. It's just the programmer decision. Okay? So, but as I said, probably a nicer way of doing that would be to say else message equals nothing, or message equals whatever you wanted to say that indicated you weren't processing. So what is 18 on this one?
Message
equals nothing.
Right. So the message equals nothing. Okay? So this one has no output. No message. It has no message. And if I'd written in there message equals nothing, it would have gotten me that. But otherwise, it basically has no message. What about the next one?
Cut 6%.
Okay, so that one is saying that the department is 14, so that's less than 20. And then I'm saying, is budget greater than 350? And it's not. So what did you say it was?
6.
Cut 6%. And what about the last one?
Yeah.
Message equals nothing.
Right. So there is no message on this. But that's just, and as I said, this is legitimate programming. If I even said, I want to do this processing for everybody that has a department less than 20. And if they don't have a department less than 20, I have nothing to do. Then this is perfectly legitimate. Okay, move on to the next ones. Because we still have, what, 2 minutes?
We emailed answers to you.
Yeah. And we've gone through 20, so, and basically we're out of time. So basically we've gone through 20, and so you are responsible for 21 through 30. Okay? So you need to mail me 21 through 30. That was a good guess that I said we were going to make it to 20. Not bad. So if your name appears on this list, you have to mail me 21 through 30. And you can just put them right in the email. Or you can get it on a piece of paper and attach it, I don't care.
Wait, what do we have to do?
Mail me 21 through 30. Because we did the first 20 in class, so you have to do 21 through 30 and mail them to me. If you weren't comfortable with what we did in class, then I suggest you go back and redo them. Just so that you'll figure out whether they make sense.
Okay.